Welcome to the Valley Outdoors. Glad to have you guys with us tonight. We have today, I don't even know what time it is. It's dark out when we do this stuff.
I don't know.
If it's morning or night. It's crazy. So,
well, it's the same.
Exactly. Don, good to have you with us.
Yeah, I'm good to be
Ava,
here.
Ava, as always, great to have you.
Thanks.
As much crap as we gave you off air momentarily.
It's no, that was all good, actually.
It's good. Hey, we got a ton to talk about. We better get after it. We're going to talk a little bit about some heavy snows that are coming out west and some dangers of people that are going to look forward to, as well as skiing at the same time. But a lot of cool stuff going on. And a real unique thing going on out west, one of the largest dam removal projects in U.S. history. We'll cover that and more when we come back. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Well, it's good to see everybody.
Yeah.
Doing well.
Yeah, staying warm, you know, it's that time of year.
Yeah.
You know, before the big event coming up. Say, next week we have to do our Christmas ideas.
Yeah. Yep. No, I'm already perusing my list. Ava, you can't skip on that. Okay. She's nodding as she's walking away from us.
Yeah.
We'll have that.
The greatest outdoor gifts.
Yep.
Or not so great.
And we have to make sure we do that within time for people to shop.
Okay. Well, it has to be next week then.
So that's what it will be. And it'll be fun. I always enjoy that because we always come up with some good ones.
Yeah.
The one that I thought was entertaining was the toilet fishing game where you're on the commode and
right. You
can magnet fish while you're on the commode.
Yeah.
Not like you have another
reason. You want one of those for Christmas?
No.
Why not? You're kind of an angler.
No, I'm good. Thanks, though. I don't need anything else there in the bathroom to keep me in there. The phones are bad enough. I mean, you start looking up fishing and what's going on, and next thing you know, it's...
You're best off leaving it outside.
Yeah. Well, of course. No way around that. So last week we did a story, Don. We talked about...
Which one?
Well, I'm not going to let you guess. I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
You ready?
Yep.
The Red Lake Ice...
The floating boys.
What do you want to call it? The extravaganza?
Flotilla?
Or the, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jump on the flow and where it go. That's the way that works. I think it's going to be one of those things. I'm going to check this next week on ice conditions because there's going to be a lot of changes this last week coming into the week because of the snow that's coming. There's going to be some heavy-duty snow coming throughout the state. And I'm going to probably call up to Mille Lacs. We'll get some more there. We'll talk to Chris up at Lake of the Woods and see what the story is up there as well. They've had a plenty of cold there, but that mid part of the state, it's been pretty rough as far as making ice and making some solid ice because it got warm, then it got cold, then it got warm, and it creates that weird ice layer. And then if you get the snow on top of it, which they also have had, we want to make sure what's going on and get some solid reports from what's happening across the state. But
I don't know that we've really had what you consider really good ice making temperatures.
Well,
because it gets cold overnight and then it warms up during the day. So, and I think that's, you know, throughout the entire Midwest, maybe way up in the north, you know, near the Canadian border, it might be different. But
if you get 8 hours of good making, you know, 5 degrees, it's going to make some ice. But again, if you get snow on it, then it really protects it. So. We'll check on that, but be safe. No matter what it is, just please, you know, the people that went out on Red Lake thought they were fine. Of course, that didn't work.
No. You know, and it happens on, last year, wasn't it on Superior? They had a...
Lake Erie.
And Lake Erie, you know, on the big puddles.
Well, you know, and Green Bay. One of the other challenges is you can have You know, I can get back. I just set my GPS. I'm not worried because it gets to be whiteout conditions out there.
Right.
You can't see up from down. You can't. So they say, well, I'm just going to set my GPS and I'll know where I'm at. Well, the problem is you can set your GPS all you want, but you could be driving along and it's blown out from shore and you drive off the edge and you're in the water.
Yeah.
That doesn't work.
No.
So understanding what's happening with the water, understanding where you are and the potential for a issue, that's a big thing. So
be aware. And if you're in a river system, be really aware. You know, I don't believe any of them that I'm aware of have even froze over yet. So
no. There was some skim ice on the river the other day when I was driving south, but it was just on the very edge.
Right.
And if you get a wind, it just breaks that up completely.
I've actually seen some boats out.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, well,
they're out also.
There's been a few days it's been fairly chilly.
And there's been some days when it's 40.
Yep.
So those are the days that are I really do enjoy.
Yep.
So I don't know what we'll have to see what happens there. But a couple cool stories we're going to be talking about later on in the show. Don, you know, you brought that up. You kind of interested to see the health of Lake Michigan, Saginaw and Erie. That's
yes.
going to be good. And another one, record Erie smallmouth. That one's a doozy. That's the kind of size, we won't tell you. That's a tease, is what they call it. That's the kind of size fish you catch down in Florida, but it's a smallmouth. So it's outstanding as far as how that goes. And we teased it a little bit at the beginning of the show. We're going to be talking about one of the largest dam removal projects. And, you know, a lot of the dams have stopped the migration of salmon, steelhead, and a lot in that western part of the U.S., and that's where this is taking place. We won't go exactly into the detail until we talk about the story. But, yeah, it's one of those things where we're looking at really having a solid DNR slash understand Corps of Engineers scenario to do that type of a project. And, I mean, you imagine what would happen if you pulled the dams out here, what it would be. I mean, as it is.
Well, it's going to be low water.
Non-navigable.
Right.
And it was almost non-navigable this summer.
Right.
So.
And this fall.
Yeah. And, you know, the migration in this particular case, it's a good thing to have the dams because you get the invasive species, so you can create some stoppage and not have those fish go all the way up into the northern tier of the Mississippi River. So in my mind, that's probably one of the best concepts that you're going to have in that mode. So I think that's your best bet. But in this case, it's a definite help. They tried to put fishing weirs in. I think you've heard about those. And then, you know, fish ladder. So they are able to jump up and through. They work, but not anywhere near. Then we also did a story on that vacuum deal where they take the fish and they shoot them up over the top.
Right.
And that was effective too. But again,
how do they keep like invasive species from coming through the lock system?
They either have done, we've done stories on that where they either do a bubbler or they do electric shock or they'll do sound where the sound emissions, they're very sound sensitive and they can't stand it. So that's one of those multi-prong approach is what they're doing. So, well, hang tight. We're going to be right back. Lots of cool stories coming up and a couple words from our sponsors and we'll be talking to you momentarily. See ya. Welcome back, everybody. Encourage you guys to check us out on where, Donald?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook. Website's cool. I just love the interactive. I was just going through that the other day to pull up a couple Michigan things as far as some dates, and it's easy.
It's all right there.
Pretty doggone easy, simple, and makes it work. And speaking of other states, decided to look when I started seeing some of the forecasts coming with snow, heavy snow, and talked to a couple friends that went out west doing some skiing. And there's still guys out hiking right now, which I think is a little crazy to be hiking in certain areas of the mountains. Well, it was crazy. The hiker just triggered an avalanche in Colorado.
Oh, my.
And he got carried away 40 feet, which is very, very lucky, as a 19-year-old hiker from Indiana was rescued on a mountain in Colorado last Saturday. He triggered an avalanche that swept him 40 feet and left him stranded. The male hiker had gone off the trail in deep snow in the Mount Flora Trail near Colorado Mines Peak, north of Berthoud Pass, when he triggered the slide, and search and rescue had mentioned. There was a video as well that shows where he ended up, which is crazy. He then hiked downhill towards the highway, called for help before 4 p.m., and he finally realized he wasn't going to be able to make it to the highway. A crew of 13 members responded to the call, met the hiker a couple hours later, and he was able to walk out on his own with snowshoes provided by the rescuers. we remind our readers and listeners that avalanche awareness safety is not only for skiers, snowboarders, and snowmobilers, it's for hikers and snowshoers also, and they can be caught in the same situation. Hiker had told the rescuers that the snow he was on when the avalanche occurred was hard and crusty, noting that there was 1 foot fracture line. Okay, so that just makes me want to throw up, honestly. I mean, I've spent years and years out west. I've got good friends of mine that patrol, that do avalanche, do all this stuff. He is probably one of the luckiest guys you could probably ever find, ever. Because normally when you get caught in an avalanche, they're going to find you. If you're alone, you're going to find your body. He had no beacon. He had nothing. He had no inflatable pack. He had nothing. And you go out west and do that, you're asking for trouble. Now, here's the other thing, Don. You guys would love this. This year, they've got more early season snow than they've had in a long time. Natural.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, the problem with that is, now they're going to be getting heavy snow, and they get on a trend where the heavy snow comes, and it keeps coming and coming and coming. Well, it lands on top of that crusty snow that was warm, cold, warm, and it gets a crust. That upper snow will not adhere to it. It'll shear, and it'll slab shear, and other names for it. I'm not the complete expert on it, but that's where the snowmobile guys get stuck, or not should say stuck, caught. And it's a problem, especially when guys are highlining. I don't know, have you ever seen what the guys go out west? I mean, there's people on here that obviously sled out west. But one of the things that a lot of times they'll do is they do what's called highlining. You see it on videos. So they crack it, go wide open, go up on a bowl, and a lot of times they go up and then circle back down and come back down and around. It's kind of cool, right? The problem is that as soon as you go up and around that circle, may not be the first person, may not be the second, but it's somebody may trigger that break because they're releasing the tension between the top section and the bottom, and then the whole thing will let loose. And then you got a problem. And that's what I don't like to say it, but I have a feeling there's going to be a lot more avalanche situations coming up this year, and a lot more people are going to get caught.
Well, I would have to think that the folks out there are aware of that and are going to be cautioning people to that and hopefully take all the safety precautions that they possibly can.
Well,
while they're out there, but you always hear about it happening.
Yeah, the unfortunate part in this particular case is you're going to find oftentimes people say, "Oh, I've been out here before and I'm good." Same thing with the guys. What they'll do is they'll go up and they'll drop off into Loveland. So you drive the Loveland Pass up instead of taking the tunnel. So the Eisenhower Tunnel coming into Colorado or coming into the main ski areas. In right. Dillon in that area. So they'll take Loveland Pass up. They'll drop their three or four guys off, and then they'll ski down it in the out-of-bounds stuff, right?
Sure.
The problem is that one of those, actually, I think it was a year ago or two, triggered an avalanche that went over a road and hurt somebody. Well, they were prosecuted.
Oh, really?
Because they caused another person damage or injury. So they were actually prosecuted.
So let me ask, is it happen very often at actual ski resorts where there are avalanches?
Yeah.
Because you would think they would try to...
Okay, so this is a good question, Don. So what happens if a lot of people, you may not know how this works. There's a significant amount of areas that are what's called beyond the ropes, or they'll open it in bowls and areas that are roped off until they are exploded. And there's multiple ways that they can trigger avalanches, and they do it on purpose. They have positions with mortars or howitzer kind of things, and right. they launch them. They'll throw it up into a bowl. They know exactly where to target it. They've got the degrees and everything set, so right. they know where to hit. And it blows up. It'll trigger. The other methodology is the patrol goes out, lights them, throws it up over the edge in areas that they can't get to, and that explodes as well. The shock will release the cornices, which are those edges that come out, and then they come back under. They'll break those off, and then it'll break up loose snow, or in this case, a non-binding layer, and it'll slide. Those are the scenarios where that's a controlled environment within the ski area boundaries. If you ski outside the ski area boundary, that's your dime, that's your ticket, that's your rescue. You pay for the whole thing. You're liable for that. And there's nothing that, I mean.
I understand if you go outside of the actual ski yep. area, but what about in the actual ski area? Is there typically any issues with avalanches?
There can be, yes. Okay. If it's a day where there's constant snow, but they're very cautious of that. They're very cautious.
Because there's so many people skiing on there, you would think if there was, it would break it loose earlier.
In the Before. Like the prime example, the issue you have is a snow situation that'll be all like an all day snow. And what ends up happening at that point is you'll have a need to have somebody blow that because it snows so hard or they have wind that's going and they'll start shooting it at X amount of point. But what they'll do is they'll shut off those avalanche prone areas.
Sure.
So they're not accessible. Those aren't groomed. They're not groomed at all. There's no snow cat going in those areas. That's going to be the off-piste or it's in area but off the main trail, it's not groomed, and that's where they'll end up shooting. But the problem is, in an all-day snow, you can get 2 feet of snow in a day and all of a sudden be in a real problem that somebody goes off, you know, out of trail. Right. It may take you half a day to get there because you're going to hike up and you're doing whatever, and then they shut it down and start blasting. So they're very cautious of that. They know who's going out. Those are real important aspects. So that pretty cool. But, you know, what can you say? That's where those pieces and parts of going out west skiing are challenging. They're also a little scary. But stay inside the ropes when they tell you you're good to go. Then I think you're...
You know what? I don't have to worry about it.
No.
Me neither.
We'll tell you what. We got a bunch of stories coming up. Hang tight. We'll be right back.
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
So, Don, we kind of teased it a little bit at the top of the show. We're talking about Lake Michigan and the health of Lake Erie, Saginaw, et cetera. And kind of a cool report that came out. Gives you the complete indications of what's going on out there.
Okay.
There's a ton of people here that go out and go fishing out to Lake Erie and Lake Michigan with salmon and everything else. So, kind of cool. But nonetheless... Large catch of adult rainbow smelt and alewife collected at a midwater trawl near Ludington during Lake Michigan Hydroacoustic Forage Fish Survey. It was one of the ways that they were able to measure. So they measure that in the bait fish as far as how strong that fishery is going to be. So one of those nice little things. A lot of factors go into effective fishery management, including the valuable research data collected each year by the Michigan DNR on research vessels in Michigan, Erie, and Saginaw. And the DNR Fishery Chief, Jim Dexter, said that the most recent survey results highlight important population trends among walleye, yellow perch, and other species, as well as factors such as angler intensity and presence of forage. Regular surveying of Michigan water tells us a lot of things about the state fisheries. Our research crews and biologists, along with state and federal partners, do an incredible job of collecting data. So here's how it came out. DNR survey vessel for Steelhead and vessels from other agencies, they plied the waters of Lake Michigan. The acoustic survey comprised of 26 transects, which is a ton of different pieces and parts and areas. And they competed 13 transects in cooperation with the DNR. And the final survey final survey results are not in. As expected, the forage fish is in abundance and was much greater near shore areas than further offshore. However, unlike previous years, midwater trawl catches and apparent fish densities were higher in the northeast near shore than the southeast near shore. Largest catches in midwater trawls in the yearling were older rainbow smelt, alewife, and bloater yearling, and older rainbow smelt have rarely been encountered in recent years. So good news for the population, which is really cool. Finally, the acoustic density estimates the midwater trawl catches have been increasing in recent years and suggest they are going to remain high and increasing regionally in Lake Michigan. Saginaw Bay, walleye abundance appears strong and their year class is being documented from 2021 and 22, observing the strong 21-year class supported by large catch of juvenile walleye ranging in size from 10 to 12 inches. Evidence supported the predicted strong 2019 year class. Will have to wait until all specimens can be aged in the laboratory. The mean larger walleye in the gill nets, there was 36.6 per net, was slightly higher than the average of 33.8 per net, which is good for especially Saginaw Bay. That's great news. Lake Erie, one of the most popular fisheries in that area, the state, has 14% of the total Great Lakes angling effort, 31% of the catch, and a catch rate that's three times the other Great Lakes waters combined.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
And the angling intensity is more than 54% of the other Great Lakes.
And it seems to get better every year.
It does. It does.
I mean, you got to think of it. That's a huge body of water, number one. And
well, and it shares shorelines with Michigan, New York, Pennsylvania, and Canadian provinces on Ontario.
Yep.
Bottom trawler survey was talking about the yellow perch and the walleye. And the ninth year, they also estimate relatively strong abundance of forage fish and that are living near the bottom. Walleye populations remain near an all-time high with the indications in recruitment. Very strong. The age zero walleye catch rate in the bottom trawl, 14 fish per 10-minute trawl, was comparable to past 2 years, coming in above the 9-year average of 11 fish per 10-minute trawl. And walleye reproduction in the past 7 years has been strong with the multi-year classes in 2015. Older walleyes were caught in the gill net this year, 150 per net lift, 40% greater than the long-term average. 40% greater than the long-term average.
Wow.
And it was 150% increase from last year and the highest rate at index station since the since 2005. Of the 404 walleye they got, they measured for biological data, 75% were above the minimum size of 15 inches. All had their stomach contents examined. 80% had food present. 66% had eaten gizzard shad. And obviously, they'll be doing more research on that as well.
You're talking Erie there?
That's Erie, yep.
Yeah.
So it's good news across the board for that area.
Yeah.
You know, and as anything, it's the forage that makes the difference. They've got so much forage base. I can't even believe how much food there is.
Do those lakes naturally reproduce real healthy?
Oh, 100%.
Yep.
Yeah. It's
because, I mean, the fish grow so fast there.
Yeah, and you know the limits that they have out there. Your daily, however you're long you're out there, I believe it's six a day.
How many?
If you're there for 7 days, you get 42 fish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's not like 12 in possession.
No. No.
And they're not little fish. I mean,
no,
I fished out there. I don't recall seeing 15-inch.
Well, you will. Walleyes. You'll find the smaller fish on the reefs. As prime example, when we're out there in Erie, we're doing if we're in a tournament and the bite starts to get tough in the morning, you're like, okay, first day usually happens that it's either you're on them or something changed and everybody's looking around, scratching their head, wondering what happened. I'm going to the reefs, and in that early season, the fish are spawning in the reefs, and you'll get the 15 to 18 inch, usually 19 inch fish. There's some 15s, and this last couple of years, there's quite a few 15s, as they had commented on.
Right.
And you can jig those up like gangbusters.
Right.
And that's what you'll find with the headboat. So if you go out an Erie, you can get go out on a headboat. You say, hey, I want to go fishing. in the town of Port Clinton. There's a ton of headboats that go out of there, and they usually take
What's a headboat?
It's like a six-person boat.
Okay.
And it's a launch.
Like a launch.
Yeah. Sure. Same concept. And then you're just vertical jigging or throwing, you know, and jigging back on the reefs. Usually it's vertical jigging. You're using a dead minnow or a live minnow, depending on what you want to do. And you're going to get those size fish. The way you get the bigger fish generally, because the fish will come up at night, the bigger fish, and then spawn and then drop off and go out to the edge and usually suspend out at that same level or a little lower, they'll hightail it out. And you troll the big crankbaits along the edges of that big reef complex, and that's where the big ones come in. But it's crazy when you go out there. It really is. I've never had more fun than being out on Lake Erie when you're running, you know, early season, you're running crankbaits, and there's a transition at about 58, 57 degree water temperature. Usually is a kind of the solid transition to night crawlers. And then you fish that all the way through June, beginning of June. You fish it the whole time, but the size drops because what happens is those fish have spawned in the reef. Once they get done, they hightail it and head east, and they are rock and roll, and they're out of there. So the smaller fish, they're resident fish, and they hang tight on the area. So you're still going to get 3-4 pounders all summer long. And thus, it really comes back to what an incredible fishery it went from, the disaster it was, the burning of the Great Lakes, you know, was on fire at some points over in Ohio.
Right. The last time I was in Port Clinton fishing, it was in the fall during the...
Fall brawl?
Well, no, it was the championship.
Oh, yeah.
For the PWT back then.
Yep. No.
And the wind was blowing. It wasn't so pleasant.
Not a good combo. Not a good combo. Well, it's a good combo with you guys listening to us. We are the Valley Outdoors. For Don, Abe, and myself, Eric, we are out of here. Hope you join us next week. See ya.